There's got to be an explanation to all these UFO sightings, right? Hey, it's Stephen Diener, host of the Unidentified Alien Podcast. And whether you're new to the conversation or have been looking into it for years, you need to check out the fastest growing alien show out there, the Unidentified Alien Podcast, or UAP for short. There's a crazy amount of alien encounter stories out there from all over the world. And the beauty of it is that I bring them all to you and let you decide what you believe. Download and subscribe to UAP on any of the major podcasting platforms. And you can also find it on UAPpodcast.com.
Welcome to the newest episode of Beyond the Fame with Jason Fraley. I'm your host, Jason Fraley, picking the brains of the top filmmakers, musicians, and artists of our time. Michael and Kevin Bacon bring their band The Bacon Brothers to Ram's Head in Annapolis, Maryland from April 6th through 8th, and The Birchmere in Alexandria, Virginia from April 11th and 12th. We spoke about their folk rock soul country sound, as well as growing up in Philadelphia, and even did a fun rapid fire through Kevin's most famous movie roles. Hey, Michael and Kevin Bacon, thanks so much for joining us on WTOP in DC. How are you?
Good. Nice to be here.
When did you guys get back out on the road? The last 2 years have been absolutely insane with the pandemic, but how did you spend the pandemic? When did you get back out there?
Yeah, it was, I guess this would have been the summer 2 years ago. We had a bunch of shows canceled, and we sort of laid low. And at the same time, it was a great opportunity to get back to writing and producing and that kind of stuff. So, luckily, as we're getting back on the road now this spring, we have a LP coming out of five songs. So timing is everything. So we'll see what happens.
What's tell me about the new LP, because I know you guys did The Way We Love in 2020, but what's the new collection of five songs?
It's some stuff that kind of jumped out over the pandemic. We're like a songwriter band, so to have new songs to play and share with people is really what we're all about. So it's really fun. They were fun songs to work on, and we were in the studio with the last record on the day when it seemed like the world shut down. I think we were in the studio on March 13th or something like that, and we started looking at the news, and we'd been starting to hear about everything that was going on, and that was we were just finishing up the record that came out last year. So some of this stuff that we recorded, the new stuff, has been done fairly remotely, just because that's kind of been the nature of making music. But we're excited to start playing again and start playing in front of people.
Funny you said March 13th. That's today's date. 2 years ago to the day is when the world stopped.
Oh, wow. Good point. Right. Maybe.
But you were in studio at the time. Wow. I would love to do a little bit of a deeper dive into those new songs. Do you have a song title or two within that new five songs that you want to talk about? Like just the writing of one of them?
Well, the single is going to be In Memory of When I Cared. And this was kind of an interesting story. Our drummer was doing a gig, I think it was at Lincoln Center, with Desmond Child, who is a mega songwriter. I'm starting with La Vida Loca, and he wrote a whole bunch of Bon Jovi songs and Aerosmith. I mean, he's just, he's a giant. And so our drummer was talking to him and suggested that maybe the three of us would get together and write. And we did. And it was kind of a new experience. It was very, very contemporary style of writing. Desmond had a bunch of tracks done by a track guy out in LA, and we just kind of picked a track, and he also had a whole bunch of titles, and we picked a title and we just cranked it out. And it's very different than anything, wouldn't you say, Kev? Any different than anything we've ever cut before? I think it's the most contemporary sounding piece we've ever done.
Yeah. I mean, it's also, sure, yeah, it's definitely, it's different, it's new, and it was also a real different kind of style of songwriting than we're used to, but really fun, and we're really happy with the song.
Nice. Thanks for taking me into that. Now, I know I'm familiar with your stuff, but we've actually interviewed you guys a couple times on this station. But in case some of our listeners maybe haven't heard your music before, you know, maybe they just know Kevin from your movies, etc. If they haven't heard your stuff, tell them about your sound, because I know that first record was for Ahsoka, folks rock, soul, country.
Giving it the old college try there, man.
I'm trying, man. The Animal House try, right? Yeah. Could you is that how you'd still describe your sound, or tell them how you'd describe your sound?
Well, I called it Foro Soko, which was folk rock, soul, country, just because, you know, the idea that you kind of go in and pick a genre is always a little frustrating, I guess, you know, just because people want to just, you know, put you in a bin. So it's hard. I mean, I think that our songs honestly do kind of go all over the map between, you know, kind of leaning more to folk, leaning more to a rock, leaning more towards soul, and, you know, a little bit of country thrown in there too. You know, I mean, it's, you know, I think that the thing is that I've tried to kind of put, you know, my finger on why this happens to be. And I think there's a few things. One is that there's two songwriters in the band. So my brother's sensibility and my sensibility, while they're really like aligned in a lot of ways, there's also kind of certain differences. Also, between the members of the band, there's a lot of different instrumentation. There's a lot of people that play a lot of things. And so, you know, when it comes, so it's not like we just write the songs and it's going to be, you know, bass, guitar, drums, and vocal. There's, you know, all kinds of different stuff that we're going to throw on there. And I think the third thing is that we dictate the sound of the recording, not by the sound of the band, but by what the writer feels the song would work for the song, you know? So if somebody hears something as a little bit more of a rock thing, or a little bit more of a pop thing, or a little bit more of a folky thing, that's the direction that the song's going to be in, as opposed to plugging the song into our specific sound.
Very cool. And thanks for helping with my butchered For Ahsoka.
Well, it would be a great marketing campaign to name our first album something that was totally unpronounceable. And gosh, it worked great.
It's brilliant. Now, in a previous time we spoke, Michael, you said your favorite song, or if you were put on the spot to pick one, at least, what you threw out Only a Good Woman, and Kevin, you said 36 Cents. Would that still be it, or are there any others that you think that have surpassed that for you each?
Oh, many.
those are some old songs, man.
Well, what would it be now? What would it be now?
I got to say, off the new CD, Kevin wrote a song called Dark Chocolate Eyes, which is just gorgeous. I don't know. It's just got a vibe to it that I don't think we've ever had before. And we've got a song.
A lot of that vibe is your cello playing, because.
Yeah, it's a song that really didn't really, you know, kind of beg for cello, but it was, you know, it worked out well. And then I have a song that I resurrected from an old movie soundtrack. I wrote an instrumental and wrote a song above it called Let Me Happen to You, Girl. And I'm not known as being like Mr. Happy songwriter, but I'm not known at all probably, but it's a very happy song. You know, it's my wife really likes it. It makes her smile. So excited about that. And we're going to open the set with it. And Kevin has a song called Erato, which is really neat and interesting, and I'm playing auto harp on that, so we have another instrument to bring into the band. And what else we got? What else we
you know, I love playing this it's a song that I wrote for Michael to sing, which is a song called Picker, which is a lot of fun, which is off the last record, and it's just a really fun song to play, because it really is basically a straight up kind of country song, but it's about Mike when he was a kid. So like it's really fun for me to write about that and then sit back and watch him sing it, and also have to play it because it's a pretty complicated pretty complicated picking on it, and things that in my wildest dreams I wouldn't be able to do. So that's always kind of
that's a lot of fun.
Play
all right.
You said it's called Picker.
Picker.
Oh, cool. Well, yeah, that's kind of cool. Well, you mentioned growing up. Remind our listeners really quick about how, you know, growing up in, I guess, downtown in Philly, you were born, eight, 9 years apart, something like that. But big family, 6 kids, you know, just take them into sort of those early days together. And, you know, both of you getting into music as kids.
Well, when I was being 9 years older, when our parents moved the whole family right into downtown Philadelphia, they were, they wanted to live in the city and bring up a family in the city for a lot of different reasons than most people would. And one was they didn't believe in the suburbs. They thought that, you know, the city was where family should be. And my father was the city planner of Philadelphia. So he not only believed in that, he did it. And for better or for worse, we were all raised on the mean streets of Philadelphia. And we had a household that was valued creativity amongst the most important things in life. And they didn't care much about academics or sports, but music, dancing, acting, art, theater, all that kind of stuff was what we were, you know, what they presented for us.
Very cool. And then I know so you were, you know, writing songs and stuff, playing with each other for years. And then the actual Bacon Brothers as an official entity was like, I guess, formed in like 95. So how did that actually come together? I know Kevin, you know, were a big movie star at that point by then, but how'd you guys decide to, you know, double back and pick up the music thing together?
Well, I mean, Michael was very much off on a music career. I mean, he was making his living from writing songs. And we had tried to write a few together, and it's just kind of a natural extension that if you write them, you sort of want to play them. And a friend of ours from Philly said, why don't you guys, he had heard a demo. We demoed probably, I don't know, 4 or 5 songs that we had lying around for a few years. And he heard it and said, why don't you call yourselves the Bacon Brothers and come down to Philadelphia and do a show. So we really just put it together for this one show. And my brother said, we're going to get a bass player and a percussionist, and you're going to play guitar. And I was like, well, I'm not playing the guitar. I can't play guitar in front of people. And he said, well, we have to have another guitar player. So I kind of, you know, started woodshedding, as we said, you know, tried to learn that at least the songs that were going to be in our set. And then, you know, that show turned to another show. Somebody else asked us to come play someplace. And so it was a really very, very small kind of grassroots beginning. It wasn't as though, you know, I woke up and said, this is something I want to do with my life. You know, it just kind of evolved in a really kind of organic way, I think.
Very cool. Very cool. All right, cool. Well, as always, I'm getting the go home message from, you know, the powers that be. So I kept my personal promise to myself. I would keep it mostly about the music. But in the final seconds, do you guys mind doing some movie rapid fire? I'll throw out a movie and you can tell me either, you know, a phrase or one word memory of it really quick.
I'll
I'll keep it organized by saying which one, I guess. So, Kevin, Animal House. Just lost Ivan Reitman, but Animal House.
Yeah, sad news about Ivan, who I'm very grateful for giving me my first job in the movies.
All right, Michael, memories of Kevin in Friday the 13th.
I just saw Friday the 13th Part 8. Is out now, and if they hadn't killed him off, he'd probably still be in it.
As a Jason, I appreciate that. All right, Kevin, Diner Levinson.
Yeah, I mean, that was a really great moment, and that was one of those movies where the memories are so strong that the guys and I still, you know, our last Zoom was just in the last like 6 months, and we still stay in touch and check in with each other. And we've remained really good friends for a really long time.
God, it launched so many careers. All right, Michael, Footloose, when you watched him on screen and that, were you dancing in the aisle like us?
Well, if only that, if only the soundtrack could have, you know, gotten out there and been hits, then it would have been better. But, you know, it tried.
Yeah, if only Loggins was like the Bacon Brothers. Nah, we're kidding. Right. We're kidding. All right, real couple more. Kevin, A Few Good Men. I mean, damn, one of the best courtroom movies ever.
I was in it. Yep, that was me.
You were in it.
It was one of the. It was one of the. I think it's six or eight Jacks that I've played. I need to stop playing Jacks. Apparently, there's been a lot of them.
You're a jack of all jacks. All right, Michael, Apollo 13.
Well, just, you know, it's really nice to, that was such a part of history and such an amazing story. And it was, the three of those guys were amazing together.
All right.
And, Kevin got to fly in the Vomit Comet too, which was, I was very jealous about.
Did you vomit?
I did not.
All right, only time for one more of each. Kevin, The River Wild, I think one of your more underrated, because it's we got to see you play a nasty villain. That, and the cast was great.
Yeah, love making it. You know, it was we spent a lot of time in the water, but you know, that was a great part, great to work with that amazing cast, Meryl and David and John Seale. I adored making that movie.
Definitely. It was like my generation's Deliverance. All right. And then I guess, Michael, we'll give you the last one. Mystic River, because, man, Clint, man, that is an all-timer.
Yeah, that was incredible.
Hey, thanks so much. Again, everyone, it's the Bacon Brothers at Rams Head Annapolis, April 6th to 8th, and Birchmere and Alexandria, April 11th and 12th. So get your tickets now. Thanks so much for doing this.
In Memory of When I Cared. That's coming out soon, so look for it, please.
In Memory of When I Cared. All right, cool. Thanks so much.
Okay, bye-bye.
We also spoke to the brothers when they previously played the Birchmere back in 2016. Fellas, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
This is, you guys come to the Birchmere a bunch, right? Why do you guys keep coming back? What makes it such a special place to play?
Well, this is Michael speaking. It's, first of all, a really, really long-standing club with a great tradition that was around, I think, pretty much when I started in the music business a long time ago. And it's just always been a very, very solid venue, really good staff, great PA. It just works. And they have, you know, some clubs, it's basically the audience is the act, whereas the Birchmere is really, people who go there, they really go there to expect a certain type of performance where there's not a lot of talking when the band's playing. And I think that we do well in those kind of venues. And we probably started playing there 15 years ago, and eventually went to two nights, and now we're at three nights. So it's just been a really successful thing for us, and I think hopefully for the club as well.
Awesome. Kevin, you have any quick thoughts on Birchmere as well?
I think that, I would just echo everything that that Mike said. You know, they when you come into the club, I don't know if they put little things on the table or people just spread the word or whatever, but they make it pretty clear that this is a listening room.
Well, that's what you want at a concert venue. I just think your guys' story is so cool, how you got the brothers and you've been sort of playing music since you were kids. Take me into, you know, where you grew up, how you started playing at a young age. Do you remember the first time you guys, you know, either picked up an instrument or a microphone?
Well, in terms of where we grew up, we were in downtown Philadelphia, and it was a tall, five-story, skinny townhouse. And there were, we have four sisters, so there's six kids in the family, sort of, you know, coming in and out. You know, by the time Kevin was born, some of my older sisters were probably in college. But it was the kind of house that creativity was encouraged above everything else. So painting lessons, art lessons, dance lessons, acting lessons, music lessons, that's what we got. And maybe to the loss of other things, like, you know, my father wasn't into sports, and, you know, we didn't go out to dinner a lot, but, you know, when it came to the arts, that's what it was. So I was always playing music since I was very young. And when Kevin came, I'm 9 years older, you know, he was probably banging on a can or something when I was singing, and my sister and I had a band, and he used to, you know, be pretty fascinated by that. And when he got older, you know, I bought him a guitar, taught him how to play Hey Jude, And later on, he was playing percussion behind me when I was out doing gigs by myself. So that's kind of where it was. And when we put the band together 20 years ago, it was we sort of took a different tack, which we had to, instead of writing songs for other people to record, or, you know, writing songs for Kevin's movies or Get Rich Quick songs, we kind of turned the corner a little bit and tended to do songs that were a little more personal. And so when you come to hear the band, you're basically hearing 90% of songs that we've written over the years.
That's awesome. Ting, I mean, I have a twin brother myself, so I love the idea of, like, the brother connection. I know you guys aren't twins, but do you guys finish each other's sentences growing up? Did you guys fight at all? What's sort of the brotherly bond that's carried on stage?
Well, you know, we didn't fight. I mean, one of the reasons we didn't fight is because Michael's 9 years older than me. And so it's, you know, we're not even, you know, Irish twins. it was more the type of thing where I looked up to him as a musical influence and a teacher and you know, we were kind of off the side of.
Kevin, I think we're losing you.
Yeah, I think Kevin got lost. I'm sure he'll call back.
That's okay. Yeah, if he calls, I mean, you can just go ahead and I guess jump off of what he was saying until he calls back. Yeah, I mean, what was sort of the bond? There was never the younger brother's trying to tag along. Was it always, you know, was there any of that sort of rivalry? Or were you guys always pretty close?
No, you know, I don't ever remember a time when I felt that way. You know, I looked at it more like, there he is.
Oh, I'm back.
All right.
Back.
You can take it now.
I'm literally looking at a cell tower as we go by, and somehow it disconnects. I don't understand that.
Where are you?
I'm driving up to, we have a show in Vermont tonight.
All right.
So we're both kind of coming from different places on the road trying to get up to this gig.
We'll blame the Vermont cell tower, but go ahead.
Yeah.
I think you're just
coming from New York.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so I went off and was doing acting, and Michael was still playing music and playing in bands. And it wasn't until the 90s that we kind of had this Bacon Brothers thing, because what happened was a friend of ours from Philly, where we grew up, he heard this demo that we had done of songs that we were hoping to pitch to other artists to get recorded. They were songs that, you know, we had written together, but they were not for us to sing. And he said, well, why don't you call the band of Bacon Brothers and come down to Philadelphia and play a show, and I'll promote it.
Nice.
And so that was really just for that one show. And then, you know, somebody heard the band or called up, and we got another one, and we did another one, and we did another one, and then eventually we did a record, and it was just kind of like that.
Nice. How do you think the band, the two of you, musically, how have you guys sort of evolved since those early days in the 90s, from then to now?
Well, it's Michael again. It's really dramatic, I would say. When we did our first gig, Kevin wasn't even playing there and playing the guitar because he didn't feel like his skills were up to it. But I pretty much insisted because we needed to have two guitar players. And when I looked at those days, even though I'd been in the music business a long time before that, I think as musicians, both of our skills and craft and musicianship has gone way up over the years. So there goes a 12 o'clock siren. So I'm really happy with that. The band's gotten bigger. It's gotten better. The songs are better. We're better in the studio. And to me, that's the whole thing, is when you do something you love, you love it, but you also want to make sure you're progressing and improving your skills, and I think we are.
Definitely. All right, make each other blush a little bit. Each of you, you know, what's the one thing that the other doesn't know that they're so damn good at on stage?
What's the thing that the other doesn't know that they're good at?
Well, I just want you guys to each, you know, riff on each other and what makes each other, you know, compliment each other.
Well, it's one of the things that's kind of fun about the show is that, you know, you kind of see two very, very, very different kind of personalities that have a very different sort of approach to performing and to life. And my brother is incredibly funny and dry and he doesn't have the you know, desire to kind of like take up space in the same way that I do. You know what I mean? he's happy to let, you know, the songs kind of speak for themselves, and he puts a, you know, kind of energy out there that's kind of more about drawing people into him, and my thing is really about more about shoving my stuff down people's throats.
Take that. Awesome. All right, cool. What can we expect at the Birchmere? Are there certain songs that, you know, I know you have like a devoted following from town to town. Are there certain ones that your most devoted fans would, you know, sort of kill you if you don't play?
Well, we try to mix the set up, and we actually, by the time we get to the Birchmere, we'll probably have four new songs, and then we brought back some older things from our earlier CDs that we kind of, you know, gotten tired of singing, but now we're sort of revisiting them, and that's been a lot of fun. So I think that the people that come to hear us will hear a lot of music that they're familiar with, and of course a lot of people will be not familiar with any of our music. So I think it's a good mix now, and you know, we've been on the road a lot this summer, and we've had chances to, you know, work stuff up and get tightened up. So I think it'll be satisfying to both the older fans and new ones as well.
Nice, yeah. Keep the old fans and bring in new ones. A lot of your guys' songs, yeah, definitely. A lot of your songs have sort of crossed over into the film world as well. I know Chop Wood, Carry Water was in The Woodsman. When You Decided to Stay Too Long was in Red Betsy. And then I know, Michael, you scored Loverboy with Kevin and his wife. How cool of an outlet is to have sort of, you know, multiple platforms like that? I mean, not every band has that, but you guys sort of work it to your advantage.
I guess we always would like to have more of that. You know, one of the things that you always hope for as a band is that someone will pick some song up and license it, you know, for a film or for a commercial. And we've had somebody that's... various people through the years we've hired that kind of helps with that song placement, but it just hasn't. I think with the amount of material that we have, I wish that there had been more of that going on, I wish that people would, you know, pick up more stuff for films and television. But it's great. I mean, when it happens, it's cool, and if it happens in an organic way, it's good. Actually, we play a song now that we reworked. That was a song we wrote for a movie that I did called Telling Lies in America. And
Oh, yeah.
I don't know whose idea was to drag out the song Live With a Lie. It's kind of, I never really even thought of it so much as a Bacon Brothers song, because mm-hmm. it was kind of written for the band in the movie to play. And they were like a early 60s R&B band.
Yeah.
And yet the song is, the way we're doing it now, it's like one of our favorite things to play. So I feel like, to answer your question, sometimes it works the other way, in that
right.
that song wouldn't have existed except for the fact that I knew that they were looking for songs for that movie, and so we pulled this one together.
Awesome. Well, we're really looking forward to you guys coming to the Birchmere. It's going to be awesome. I guess just wrapping up, a final question. Whenever I have sort of big names on here, remember we had Joe Walsh do this, we had Spike Lee do this, we usually try to end with sort of like a rapid-fire word association. If you guys are game, I'll maybe throw out your movie titles, and you guys can go back and forth, just the first thing that comes to mind. Each of you take turns answering?
Sure.
All right. Maybe start with Michael. When you hear mm-hmm. when you hear Animal House.
Animal House. Oh, documentary.
What'd you say? What'd you say? Documentary? of you or Kevin or both of you guys?
Well, you know, I really mean, because when I was at college, I was in a fraternity, and there was a house exactly like that. And they were all the Misfits, and they were the only house that actually was getting the girls. All the preppy houses with all the really good-looking frat boys. They didn't get anything. So to me, it really was. It was that Animal House was on my college campus.
Perfect. Like all of us. All right, Kevin, Friday the 13th.
Arrow through the throat.
Michael, Diner.
Diner. Amazing cast. In fact, Steve Guttenberg is my locker buddy, so it's fun when we talk you know, about that experience. And yeah, it was kind of the first real breakout film that Kevin had. And I remember seeing him on the street, and there were people lined up around the block to see it. So that was pretty exciting.
Awesome. Kevin, Footloose.
Sorry, what?
Footloose.
Fill me, I'm trying to remember that one. No, I'm just kidding.
What was that movie again?
Great song. A great song by Kenny Loggins.
All right, definitely. He was just here for the Capitol Fourth concert. All right, Michael, A Few Good Men.
Just a great story. I love those kind of courtroom trial things, and it was just, you know, a lot of really cool stuff about the military, and that was a tough part because, frankly, a Marine officer is not exactly who my brother is in real life.
Right, right. Hey, thanks, guys.
Okay.
We'll see
you. All right, take care.
And we spoke a third time when the brothers played the Birchmere in 2019.
Thanks so much for calling in, fellas. I appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having us.
All right, so like we said, it's the Shake Your Ground Tour. I know you guys have played the Birchmere a bunch. What are we working with set list wise? If people came to the Birchmere in past years, is this stuff from your 2018 album, you know, the self titled one, Bacon Brothers, or is there anything new you're mixing in there? You know, what can we hear on the set list?
Well, this is Michael
speaking.
We have a brand new song coming out tomorrow called Play, so that'll be in the set list and. We actually have a pretty thick backlog of stuff that we haven't necessarily worked up yet, but hopefully we can grab some time. We're going to have a rehearsal in July. I'm hoping we can get, you know, three or four new ones on by the time the tour really gets going.
Awesome. Tell me a little bit more about Play. You said it's coming out tomorrow. Well, I guess by the time this airs, it'll be freshly out. Tell me about the song Play. I can't wait to hear it. You know, what's it about?
Play is a song about the answer to the question that I get time and time again, which is, how do you stay married for so long? And it's a question that, you know, I'm kind of tired of. And sometimes when people ask you that, they say, it must be a lot of work. You guys must really have to work at it, you know. Marriage or relationships, they're a lot of work. And I say, not really. It's really more about play. And so that's really what the song is. It's a kind of a funky response to that question.
So you mean the idea of, like, you know, work and play. It's you make sure you play with your partner and more than just work. Is that what you're talking about?
Exactly.
Okay.
Well, exactly.
So yeah. Kevin, what's the secret to marriage? No, I'm just kidding. I'm not going to give you that. Thanks so much for distilling that down. Yeah, just play, baby. Talk about the venue itself. So I know you guys said, you know, Michael and I were talking off the air here that you've played there a million times. What makes it so cool? Is it the intimacy dish on the venue a little bit?
Well, there's a couple of things going on with the Birchmere. First of all, if you have a club that's been around for as long as that has, the audience almost gets trained for what kind of, you know, audience response works in that place. So what you get is a really great listening audience, but also pretty rowdy, and they kind of follow along wherever we want to go. The other thing is it has an amazing sound system, a great monitor engineer, great staff, food is good, they treat us really well. We're there for three nights, which is a real gift when you're touring, because usually you're staying everywhere on one night, but you know, if you can stay in the same place for 3 days, it's really nice. So it's pretty much the best club I've ever played, and I'm glad they're still doing business, and we're happy to be back there.
Awesome. Yeah, it really is a special place to go watch music. Fans in D.C. people are really lucky. It's like an old jewel here in town. Take me back to the beginning. I know, because I know your guys' backstory a little bit, but if our listeners, you know, maybe, you know you guys from your other work, but maybe haven't been following the band a long time, like, give them the backstory of, like, you know, you guys grew up in Philly, right? I think Michael is what? How many years older? And, you know, just how, you know.
I'm 9 years older.
9 years older, yeah. Did you guys play music growing up in the city, the Brothers in the Brotherly Love Town? Or, you know, how did this whole thing actually form as a band?
Well, it actually has a little bit of a Philly connection because we started writing together when I was a kid, because Michael was already off on a, you know, a successful music career, and he was playing in bands and playing in and around and recorded stuff and was playing in Philly. And, you know, of course, you know, you look up to your older brother. So I started writing songs in my head and having lyrics, and I would bring them to him, and he would kind of help me form them into songs. So we started demoing some of those. And we probably had written about 10 songs together over the years. And in the 90s, a friend of ours heard the demo. We had both long since left Philly. I mean, you know, I left, both of us, I guess, left Philly in the 70s. But in the early 90s, our friend heard the demo and said, why don't you come down to Philly and do a Bacon Brothers show, quote unquote. And so basically we became the Bacon Brothers. The Bacon Brothers wasn't really our idea. It was our friend Harry's idea. And we played the one show down in Philly, and then somebody kind of called up and said, hey, would you play another one? And that's just kept rolling on from there.
Awesome. How do you guys split the load on stage? I know you guys can both sing, you can both strum, but what do you think each of you brings? You know, what does Michael, actually answer it about each other. That's probably the best way. So let's ask Michael, what does Kevin bring to the live stage persona? And then follow it up, Kevin, I want you to say what you think Michael is, you know, what's his element there?
Well, the most important thing is he's a wonderful songwriter and a great singer and a great partner. And, you know, songwriting is a very strange thing because it's self-revelatory, and it's always interesting when we'll go through something on the road, you know, some experience of some kind, and a couple of weeks later, all of a sudden, I'll hear Kevin singing a song and say, oh, yeah, I was there when that happened. So that's pretty neat. The other thing that's nice is Kevin's really a front man. He's a natural-born front man. I'm really not. To me, playing music on stage is more of a learned experience. So I think what you do is you get brothers who are really, you know, who are brothers and close, but really very different. And I think people like the idea that we're not kind of clone. We're not Milli Vanilli. We're, you know, Kevin kind of does his thing and I do mine. And I think that we collaborate with each other on stage in a really good way. Plus, we have a wonderful band, and you know, they can kind of go wherever we want them to go.
Kevin, do you have a take on, you know, what you each, you know, bring to it?
Yeah, well, you know, Michael is again a great songwriter, you know, and a fantastic singer. He's the guy on stage that sings in tune, which is always helpful. And he has a really, really, really vast kind of musical knowledge. You know, he can compose, he can write, and he knows, has an extremely good understanding of all kinds of, you know, harmony and counterpoint and all these things that are way, you know, beyond my skill set. And so when you see the show, you know, as he said, I'm a little bit more of a sort of front man kind of show off. And then the real, you know, the musicianship comes from him and the rest of the players in the band. And Mike's going back and forth between acoustic guitar and different kind of, you know, finger picking styles, and then electric guitar and cello and ukulele. And so it's, you know, I think that as is the case with, you know, any kind of band where you have two different people, there's a lot of people that will sort of, you know, relate to him and his sensibility more, and some people that'll, you know, relate to my sensibility more. So you kind of, it's kind of the best of both worlds.
And just now, in both of your answers, you both mentioned that, you know, the other brother, you said they were great songwriters. What you got? You've done multiple albums with so many songs. Michael, what is your favorite song that you guys have written?
Well, I would have to say it's this song we wrote a long time ago, maybe even before we put the band together, called Only a Good Woman. And a lot of times in a lot of the bands that I've been with in my career, there's, you can play a gig and it's not going so well, but if you have that one song that people really like, you can kind of resurrect your set from the doom. And this song is called Only Good Woman, and we wrote it together, and it has about a zillion words, and it's really funny, and it's really true, and we believe it. And, you know, it's still in the set, not every night, but, you know, when we really want people to have a good time, we'll stick that out there. It's a great song.
Kevin, do you agree that that's your best, or is there another, you know, hidden gem or something that you're like, no, we must have on the set every night?
And we don't play Only a Good Woman every night, but not really. Mm-mm. No, I mean, I there's things that are fun for different sorts of reasons, you know. I mean, we have this thing that we were playing a song of Mike's called 36 Cents, and we'd been playing it for a long time, and then we decided to try to play it in sort of in an unplugged kind of way. Mm-hmm. And then somebody came up with this. It's hard to explain, but it's kind of like a little additional ending to the song. And all of a sudden, the song that we've been playing for, you know, years became super fun to play again. So, you know, I always look forward to that one just because it's, you know, people would really enjoy it.
Yeah, what happens is there's an instrumental part, which is pretty technically difficult. And then after the song ends, we sort of have a false ending, and then we go into the lick again, but twice as fast. And it's just barely able to keep up with it. And it's, you know, it's a real challenge every night to try to chase that tempo of that crazy lick.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
Right.
Do either of you guys have a turn of phrase, a lyric, whether it's a, you know, an irregular rhyme or a perfect rhyme, whatever, that, you know, that you're most, that you slap the desk and you're like, damn, that I'm damn proud of that one.
Oh, a lyric that we've written?
Yeah, lyrically, yeah. Is there something that you want us to, like, as we're leaving the Birchmere, we're like, damn, that's a clever turn of phrase right there.
I'll have one. Mine's called Don't Leave the Lava Lamp On For Me. And you can imagine what that's about. I'm not a fan of the 60s, so that's what that song's about.
Gotcha. When you guys were first forming and even through the years, is there any other, you know, bands in a certain genre that you guys, like, have always, like, you know, let's pattern our own stage after this, or let's pattern our sound after that? You know, what were sort of your idols growing up in terms of music?
You know, our first record was called Faro Soko, which is folk rock soul country, and just kind of like a term that we came up with. And I think that it was kind of a joke because we have had so many different kinds of influences, you know, and there's two of us and there's an age difference. And so, you know, Mike's different influences are different than my influences. And then it's so many years. And then you add to that all the players in the band and the different way stuff that they've been kind of, you know, kinds of music that they've played. So we're really kind of like all over the map. But I guess if we had to pick one band, we would say the band, only because the band, you know, had a similar kind of instrumentational thing, and mostly did, you know, kind of organic sounds with B3 organ, sometimes used, you know, some horns, and went between electric guitars and acoustic guitars, and always had great grooves and you know, an incredible drummer, and you know what I mean, that kind of stuff is the type of thing that we really aspire to.
Take a load off Fanny. Man, all right, well, you guys have to redub Easy Rider with your guys, you know, songs on there. No one will know the difference. All right, well, speaking of movies, Kevin has a lot of roles, but a lot of people may not know Michael. You won an Emmy for the score for TV's Kennedys. Take me into how awesome it was, well, not only to be recognized. I know awards are just, you know, throwaway things sometimes, and artists don't really care about them so much, but just, you know, to be recognized and, you know, what you were going for in writing that score. That's pretty awesome, man.
Well, it was, first of all, the film itself the TV show did really well, which sort of drags a lot of the contributors along with it. But it was 4 hours, and a lot of the work I did was these long-form documentaries where there might be 30 pieces of music per hour, so if you multiply that by four, well over 100 cues that have to be written and approved and produced and edited and all that kind of stuff. As far as the award goes, it's nice because it immediately defines me as having won something, but I have to say at the same time that it doesn't really get you any work, and I, you know, I'm proud of having it, but to me that was in the past, and I'm ready for my next one.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I know the awards really don't really matter anything. So I've promised myself I'd limit myself to one movie question for you, Kevin. just to wrap it up here so my listeners don't kill me. But do you have a role, not even talking awards here, because I know you won the Globe for Taking Chance, but do you have a role you are most proud of all the genres? Do you have a personal role where you look back on and say, I did my best work there?
You know, not really. I have to say I'm not spending a lot of time in the rearview mirror. You know, I try to, I haven't gotten to the point in my life where I'm ready to just sort of look back. You know, I'm looking down the road and I'm hoping that the best part is in front of me.
I love it. But there's nothing for a cool radio soundbite that you had at least a good on set time doing or anything like that.
Well, you know, I mean, I had a great time making the movie Diner. We were young guys and down in Baltimore having a lot of fun. And I had a great time making Mystic River. Those were both really, really fun experiences. You know, it's strange because, you know, there's the making of it and then there's the actual film itself, you know, and those are two different things, the memory of it and the actual what actually ended up on the screen. And sometimes you can have a great time and make a lousy movie, and sometimes you can have a lousy time and make a great movie. You never know.
Right. Well, thanks for all the movie memories and also the music memories now, everybody. So we'll cut you loose, but thanks so much again, guys. Again, it's Bacon Brothers at the Birchmere. Thanks.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks.
Thanks so much for joining us on Beyond the Fame with Jason Fraley. Remember to hit the subscribe button and give us a 5-star rating if you like what you hear. We'll see you next time. I wanted to take a second to tell you about an app I really enjoy. Living in the DC area is great, and Podcast DC gathers all of the local shows that I like all in one local app. Health, sports, local news, politics, and so much more. Podcast DC is the new local app with hundreds of DC area podcasts to choose from. I can earn exciting rewards just for listening and share the podcasts I love instantly. Available in the App Store or in Google Play, listen local with Podcast DC.